Eric is a...
Now, the one who protects us all from prattling prognosticators and perfidious pundits.
I say, America, stay out the bushes.
Look for the union labor.
I will secure these rights governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the government.
From my cold, dead hands.
It's time for the Alan Nathan Show. Here he is, the longest-running nationally syndicated centrist host in the country, Alan Nathan.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back every year as Alan Nathan, the militant moderate. Once again, this is the Oasis for those who have an aversion to the left, right, black, white, two-dimensional approach. Absolutely delighted you could join us. If this is your virgin voyage, allow me to share with you our mantra. Folks, we want the Republicans out of our bedroom, the Democrats out of our wallets, and both out of our First and Second Amendment rights. We feel there exists this cavernous gap separating the two orthodoxies, and that it's a gap comprised of many degreed thinking people who can argue quite passionately in shades of gray. And to that end, each and every show, we have fine guests to help best illustrate this point. Today is no exception. Also, if you wish to hook up with us on the web, it's www.alannathan.com. Don't forget that email address, alan@alannathan.com. That's A-L-A-N. Coming at you live and strong each and every Monday through Friday at this time. Don't forget the classic Alan Nathan Show, Saturdays 6 to 7 p.m. and overnight Sunday mornings 3 to 4, all times Eastern. We are indeed a Main Street Radio Network production. Please check us out at mainstreetradionetwork.com. Feel free to avail yourselves of our nascent but always robust Twitter and Facebook options that we have there for you. And, of course, with great dispatch and alacrity, we love to thank our distributor, the Salem Radio Network. That's right, the Alan Nathan Show entering its 18th year of national syndication, all thanks to you, reaching about 800 towns and cities across a couple of hundred radio station broadcasts each week. Again, all thanks to you. And by the way, I don't care if you're part of the authoritarian left or perpetually clueless right, please get out of the thought control business. Our topics du jour, as you may have heard. In Wisconsin, Sanders prevails over Clinton while Cruz demolishes Trump. Our trajectory's now changed. I don't know much for Sanders. And even with a Cruz-Trump matchup, I don't know, it's a coin toss, really. Although, obviously, the advantage is numerically still with Mr. Trump. Also, new Reuters poll shows Cruz beating Trump nationally for the first time. I'm wondering if the Donald will cite that survey. Also, after a judge says the State Department showed bad faith in a FOIA case over Clinton's email abuse, now the states want the plaintiff denied discovery of that bad faith. I guess I would, too. Anyway, System Media opining and analyzing, old friend of the show, Raj Shah, research director and deputy communications director at the RNC. He was also director of vetting for Senator John McCain's presidential campaign run, and he was also a research assistant at the White House. Good to have you back, Raj. How are you today?
Alan, thanks for having me on. I'm having a great day. It's very sunny out.
It is beautiful, though, a skosh chilly, but it is beautiful out. You know, we've got two FOIA cases, these Freedom of Information Act cases brought by Judicial Watch against the State Department's role in Hillary Clinton's email controversies. Now, the one before Judge Sullivan is about Judicial Watch's request for records surrounding the hiring of Clinton's chief of staff, Uma Abedin, at the State Department. This is because she had also been hired at the now scandal-soaked Clinton Foundation, who was apparently occupying both jobs. Now, the one before Judge Lamberth is surrounding the Benghazi emails and how they were also handled and what records are in that regard. In your estimation, is this getting deeper and deeper to the point where there is no way but for it to be problematic for the former secretary's endeavors in this presidential race?
Well, it's certainly quite problematic for her endeavors. And actually, there's been some developments in the last week that I think are quite telling. The State Department is now asking the judge to narrow what he had originally allowed Judicial Watch to subpoena and to depose the State Department aides, citing the FBI's investigation. What does that mean? It means that they think that these aides might essentially lend information that could help undermine their criminal defense in this case. So essentially, Judicial Watch is snooping around and getting close to the facts about the setup of this email server that the FBI is also looking into. Essentially, by actually abiding by the FOIA law, they may be admitting to a crime. I mean, that's essentially the argument that they're putting forward. And they're saying, well, please let the FBI handle it because they're a law enforcement agency, and now we're moving into law enforcement territory. And so,
let me share with folks some of the updates that we have. We have Josh Gerstein. He's been writing a lot about this in Politico. Now, near the end of March, he had a piece out entitled "Second Judge Grants Discovery in Clinton Email Lawsuit." And it says, citing indications of wrongdoing and bad faith, a federal judge has overruled government objections by declaring that a conservative group is entitled to more details about how Hillary Clinton's private email account was indeed integrated into the State Department record-keeping system and why it was not searched in response to a Freedom of Information Act request. Okay, U.S. District Judge Royce Lamberth entered an order Tuesday agreeing that Judicial Watch can pursue legal discovery, which often includes depositions of relevant individuals, as the group pursues legal claims that state did not respond completely to a FOIA request filed in May of 2014 seeking records about talking points that then U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Susan Rice used for TV appearances discussing the deadly attack on U.S. facilities in Benghazi in September. So Lamberth is about records surrounding the lies that were perpetrated surrounding Benghazi, because everybody now knows that on the 12th of September 2012, Hillary Clinton made it abundantly clear in her own words, and it was discovered in her own emails, that she had talked with the Egyptian prime minister and realized that the Benghazi attack was a well-planned terrorist attack and was not attributable to an anti-Muslim video. 2 days later, of course, she's speaking over the flag-draped coffins of the then recently butchered out of Benghazi, and what is she doing? Still trying to claim that it's attributable to an anti-Muslim video. All right, and these are the records that Judicial Watch are pursuing with Joyce Lamberth. However, the ones having to do with Uma Abedin, that one's being handled by Judge Emmett Sullivan, and in both cases, we've had both judges giving Judicial Watch reign of discovery, the opportunity to conduct depositions, and they're both having to do with FOIA, which makes them both unusual, favors granted by the judge. One has to believe that there's more fire than smoke. Your assessment?
Yes, I do believe that there is certainly more fire than smoke, because, you know, when you essentially, I mean, the hiding of records, or of taking records off of government possession in a place where they cannot be accessed under FOIA, is the, you know, essential equivalent of destroying them, right? I mean, now you're taking records that the public has a right to know about, and you're keeping them from the public. And for the State Department to say, well, I guess we don't have them, well, I mean, that's not an adequate response. And the State Department is clearly acting in bad faith. And we want to know, and Judicial Watch wants to know, and the RNC and everybody else wants to know, how did this happen? Why did this happen? Who thought that this arrangement was appropriate? Who approved it? All these questions continue to remain out there. And, you know, it's not just these FOIA requests. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of FOIA requests
that were accordingly disrupted because of the same wrongful act. Now, we just mentioned Lamberth is having to do with the issues surrounding Benghazi, but Sullivan is the one dealing with the Uma Abedin inquiry. And again, the problem with her is that, of course, while Uma Abedin worked at State, she was also working at, as I mentioned earlier, the scandal-soaked Clinton Foundation. Now, Josh Gerstein gives us an update on, of course, Emmett Sullivan. He says top aides to former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton should not be questioned about an ongoing FBI investigation into the presence of classified information on a private email server or about the substance of the messages that were exchanged as part of a Freedom of Information Act lawsuit, the State Department said in a court filing. So the State Department is saying that top aides to Secretary Hillary Clinton should not be questioned in any way, shape, or form that has anything to do with the FBI investigation currently underway about both her and her team's activities. How do you see this panning out?
Well, I mean, I don't know what the judge will rule, but, you know, this basically states that what Judicial Watch is going to ask about is also what the FBI is investigating. So they are looking for criminal wrongdoing, speaking of the FBI right now, and it looks like where Judicial Watch's FOIA litigation is headed also points toward criminal wrongdoing. And, you know, I would add that the FBI, I mean, look, they are the authority in this, and they should, you know, kind of have the right to kind of manage this investigation. But it shows you that this email setup was certainly not above board and is raising a lot.
Oh, my God, without a doubt. Hey, let's be honest here. Because in addition to rendering classified intelligence more vulnerable by having it on a non-government server, you also had FOIA requests by citizens for government records being kept from getting properly satisfied. How is that not a violation of the law? Stick with us.
This report is brought to you by Kaplan University School of Business and Information Technology. Tax filing season is also tax fraud season. The Government Accountability Office reported the IRS paid out $5.8 billion in fraudulent tax refunds in 2013, with that number expected to triple this year. For the 60% of Americans who rely on tax professionals, the fight against fraud starts with a practitioner ready to delve in deep. This is why Kaplan University School of Business and IT offers advanced accounting degrees practitioners need to support their role as a trusted advisor. According to Kaplan accounting professor Monica Hubler, a tax preparer who's too quiet during the process should raise a red flag with clients.
Being a CPA is not just about crunching numbers. It's about protecting your clients by asking the hard questions. Professionals committed to being this first line of defense against tax fraud recognize the value of further developing their knowledge and skill base to know the right questions to ask and when.
For more, visit programs at kaplanuniversity.edu.
Today, Mars Drinks revealed findings from a new study, The Workforce Voice, powered by LinkedIn, which offers a fresh perspective on how workplace vitality, the intersection of engagement, collaboration, well-being, and productivity, can positively contribute to organizational effectiveness. The company's global vice president of workplace vitality, Tracy Brower, explains.
We know from our research on workplace vitality that to reach our full potential, organizations must create work environments where people have a sense of empowerment and belonging. However, our newest research actually shows that barely 50% of the respondents feel like their current employers are doing a good job fostering workplace vitality. Our body of research also demonstrates that beverages play a more important role in the workplace than you might think. 80% of U.S. professionals believe coffee is important to their well-being at work.
On April 7th, Mars Drinks will launch a new diagnostic survey to help companies evaluate their workplace vitality by offering results, analysis, and recommendations on how to make their workplaces thrive. For more information, visit marsdrinks.com.
My name is Judy Teeter, and I'm the mother of three boys. My youngest, Joe, was a great kid. He loved sports, music, and his youth group. One day, Joe asked me to drive him to an after-school event, which was about a mile from our home. I was driving through a green light when a car in cross traffic ran a red light and drove right into the side of our car, killing Joe. The driver was talking on her phone, so she never even saw the red light. She was so absorbed in her phone call. Before the crash, I didn't realize just talking on a cell phone while driving was so dangerous. Now it's something I think about every day. According to the National Safety Council, about one in four car crashes involves a cell phone. Hands-free is no safer. When you're behind the wheel, put away your phone. For Joe and for the thousands of needless deaths every year. Remember, there is no safe way to talk on a cell phone while driving. Find out more at nsc.org/callskill.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show.
If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils, like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Millionaires working side by side with George Soros are bankrolling his super PAC, while Kasich votes against the Second Amendment and expanded Obamacare in Ohio.
What do you make of that?
I think it's funny. Look, George, you know politics. You've been in it. It's what you put up with in a campaign. Of course, that distorts virtually everything. And in fact, the Wall Street Journal in an editorial the other day said it was actually a smear. But, you know, look, I've spoken out. I've said what I want to say. But frankly, I'm interested in talking about my record of job growth, of creating security for people in the workplace. And that's where I'm going to live. You know, I've had some pretty strong things to say a couple days ago in regard to Trump and some in regard to Cruz. But I don't live in that lane. I live in a different place because I have a record of accomplishment.
And apparently it's one that has very little resonance on the campaign trail. You're listening to the musings of John Kasich, governor of the great state of Ohio, who seems to be living in a fantasy world. It doesn't matter what he says about Messrs. Trump and Cruz, the New York billionaire or the Texas senator. It doesn't seem to matter at all because they're going on their merry way, outperforming Mr. Kasich at virtually every level. But he still chats away. It's funny. Anyway, welcome. We are, of course, the Alan Nathan Show. Delighted to have you back. Talking about a number of things. First of all, in Wisconsin, Sanders prevails over Clinton while Cruz demolishes Trump. Our trajectory's now changed. Also, a new Reuters poll shows Cruz beating Trump nationally for the first time. Will the Donald cite that survey? And also, after a judge says the state showed bad faith in a FOIA case over Clinton's email abuse, state now wants the plaintiff deny discovery of that bad faith. How does that work? Anyway, again, once more, this is the Oasis for those who have an aversion to the left-right, black-white, two-dimensional approach. So absolutely delighted you could be with us. And joining us as well as old friend of the show, one of my regulars, Tom Schott, president of Citizens Against Government Waste. His editorials on fiscal policies have appeared in publications nationwide, including the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal. Mr. Schott has testified numerous times concerning government waste issues before congressional committees as well as regulatory bodies. Tom, good to have you back. How are you?
Always glad to be on, Alan. How are you?
I'm hanging in. Well, we're looking at a number of things, but when you look at the Wisconsin primary, my. Ted Cruz gets it by 48.2% and picks up 36 delegates. Donald Trump gets 35.1% and gets 6. John Kasich gets bupkis. When looking at the Democrat side, we see Bernie Sanders. He gets 56.6% over Hillary Clinton's 43.1%, giving him 47 delegates to her 36. Now, she clearly was a bit closer to Mr. Sanders than Donald Trump was to Cruz. And then on top of that, we hear this new poll out from Reuters for the first time showing Cruz with the lead nationwide, only by a couple of points within the margin of error, but still noteworthy nonetheless. Your assessment, sir?
It's getting very interesting. It's exactly what everybody said. Wisconsin would help determine whether there will be a contested Republican convention. It's a little bit up in the air if Donald Trump wins more than 50% in New York, which at least for now is the current polling. He wins all the delegates, all 95. If he gets below that, there is a split. So that's pretty critical as well in 2 weeks. And knowing Mr. Trump, you never know what he's going to say in the next minute, let alone over the next 2 weeks. New York, of course, still very strong for him. And then there's California, tons of delegates there. So it's going to be very, very difficult for Donald Trump to get enough, and the convention could be a lot of fun. I think on the other side, Bernie Sanders is only about 300 delegates behind Hillary Clinton when you take out the superdelegates. And it's funny how everybody talks about, oh, what's going to happen? The Republicans are going to fix it, this and that. The Democrats fixed it for Hillary because they have these super delegates. They get extra votes and never have to go to the polls. They just pick them and say, oh, well, you know, let's go for her because she looks like the front runner. So.
No, I see that. And they do want to give her the advantage as the process continues, as they did, however, though, in 2008 with Barack Obama. But when Barack Obama still defied the odds and accumulated more rank and file folks in the form of pledged delegates, then those who had been previously backing Hillary indeed shifted over. And a lot of people are asserting the same thing would happen in her contest with Sanders. Because otherwise it's going to look kind of strange if the rank and file are seemingly giving greater numbers to Sanders than Clinton. And the only reason why she prevails is because of these super delegates who are not tethered to the rank and file that actually drove this show as we've seen it driven. And it does seem as if while that unfairness or that unfair component indeed exists on the Democratic side, at the same time, once those rank and file pledged votes do add up to more than what Hillary Clinton is having, are you suspecting that perhaps the same thing will happen in 2016 as that happened in 2008, that the superdelegates are going to see that the pledged delegates are outnumbering the person they're backing, so they will accordingly shift sides? Your take.
At this point, in the same thing with Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, he was ahead of her with regular delegates by now, and of course Bernie Sanders is not yet. I think if he did get ahead of her, they would almost have to do something about it, because otherwise it really would like it's fixed. And she has enough issues with popularity as it is. This is what happens. The only difference now and prior years where there was a contested convention with Gerald Ford is every second of every day is being put on social media, put on television, and it makes it a lot more interesting. But this is the process. It's the way it's supposed to work. And it's, you know, if you sit back and look at it, it's kind of fun.
It is kind of fun. But just to make sure I have your answer correct, are you of the opinion that if it turns out Sanders does start to accumulate more of the regular rank and file pledge delegates than does Hillary Clinton, that because of that fact, even if Hillary Clinton still has the lead because of the superdelegates, again, those superdelegates are more likely, perhaps, to shift over to Sanders, because otherwise it would look like a party-decided conclusion versus the people having relevance to the process. Yes?
Of course, Bernie Sanders hasn't threatened riots at the convention like Donald Trump, but I would just think that there'd be a lot of resentment among the voters. I mean, he's killing her with younger voters, and I think they would stick with him throughout this entire process. So do they not vote?
Well, I don't defend Trump, okay? I love the anti-establishment movement, because the anti-establishment political, I love the anti-establishment movement because the establishment political class has for too long gotten away with prevaricating with no accountability on both sides of the aisle. But the conservatives these days are especially ticked off. And there are a lot of folks who are very conservative that are still backing Trump because they consider him to be the punishment candidate, the up yours candidate. Although a lot of folks are saying, wait a minute, Cruz is also quite an up yours candidate because nobody in the Republican Party likes him on Capitol Hill. And the reason they don't is because Cruz has been inclined to say, hey, you, the establishment, have for too long proven unsatisfactory, setting people up for a fall, not following through in your promises. Therefore, it's time for a big change. But it does seem as if that anti-establishment crowd appears to be shifting in their comfort zone from Trump to Cruz, at least according to the latest Reuters poll. Your assessment of that?
It could be, and I think it's going to be interesting to see who can coalesce behind Cruz in the next couple of debates. Primaries, because he's got to start accumulating more delegates in order to be more viable at the convention, if it's really him in the end.
So he's going to have to get kind of close to Trump, even if he doesn't beat him, in order to have any chance at a brokered convention in the event that nobody gets the 1237. Always great. Tom Schatz, president of Citizens Against Government Waste. Going to be right back.
The 2016 tax season deadline is quickly approaching. If you can't file before the April 18th deadline, you may want to consider applying for an extension. Director of Block Advisors, Meg Sutton, reminds us that filing for an extension doesn't mean you get more time to pay what you owe.
There are just about 2 weeks left in the tax season. Right now, we know that about one-third of all taxpayers who need to file haven't. Many are taxpayers who think they owe but can't pay or choose not to file because they owe. Filing for an extension is not an extension to pay taxes, but it can prevent a taxpayer from paying charges that could add up to 25% in penalties on top of the interest to their tax bill. And for those of you who owe but can't pay, the solution is simple. Go ahead and file anyway. Find out what you owe so you can plan accordingly and get access to possible IRS payment plans. When filing, be sure to also look out for some of the most overlooked tax breaks like education credits and deductions.
For more information, visit hrblock.com or blockadvisors.com.
Hi, I'm Lynette Calfani-Cox, the Money Coach, here with some interesting housing market trends this spring home buying season. According to a new survey by Chase, the rise of technology and digital is transforming home buying. The survey revealed that 3 in 4 home buyers do not plan to stay in their home for the long term, suggesting that today's consumer is always looking for the next best thing. Americans are also increasingly using technology to become do-it-yourselfers, especially in the early stages of buying a home. Despite an increase in technology, Chase research found that roughly 3/4 of Americans still want to meet with a mortgage professional about their financing options, and they also see the value of a realtor. There are many best practices that go into purchasing a home, but one of the most important tips I tell people is to act on information, not emotion. To learn more about the Chase Home Buying Survey and to view more of my home buying tips, visit chase.com/homebuyers.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show.
If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
John Nichols was making major strides in his career when at age 32, a water skiing accident left him critically injured. Fortunately, he had disability insurance.
For me, disability insurance was the safety net. I did not have to worry about the bills. I did not have the financial concerns.
Thanks to disability insurance that John had through work and on his own, he continued to receive an income until he could return to work. Learn more at protectyourpaycheck.org, a message from the Nonprofit Life Foundation.
This is Rick Osick, president of Famous Footwear. Our company is working together with the March of Dimes through March for Babies to raise money and awareness about the serious problem of premature birth in the U.S. As a business leader, I know that babies born very sick or too soon cost businesses billions of dollars each year, in addition to the emotional stress on employees and their families. That's why Famous Footwear is committed to raising funds to improve the health of moms and babies everywhere. Won't you please join us in the March for Babies? Start a team today at marchforbabies.org.
The Affordable Care Act provides Americans with better health security by expanding coverage, lowering health care costs, and guaranteeing more choice. Under the law, a new Patient's Bill of Rights gives the American people the stability and flexibility they need to make informed choices about their health. Some of the benefits of this coverage include ending pre-existing condition exclusions for children. Health plans can no longer limit or deny benefits to children under 19 due to a pre-existing condition. Keeping young adults covered. If you are under 26, you may be eligible to be covered under your parents' health plan. Ending arbitrary withdrawals of insurance coverage. Insurers can no longer cancel your coverage just because you made an honest mistake. Guaranteeing your right to appeal. You now have the right to ask that your plan reconsider its denial of payment. Open enrollment begins in November and ends on January 31st. You can learn more about the insurance marketplace and how to apply for benefits at www.healthcare.gov.
Tonight is a turning point. It is a rallying cry. It is a call from the hardworking men and women of Wisconsin to the people of America. We have a choice. A real choice. And as a result of tonight, as a result of the people of Wisconsin defying the media, defying the pundits, I am more and more convinced that our campaign is going to earn the 1,237 delegates needed to win the Republican nomination. Tonight was a bad night for Hillary Clinton. It was a bad night in the Democratic primary, and it was an even worse night for her in the Republican primary.
When you look at national polls or you look at statewide polls, we are defeating Donald Trump by very significant numbers. And in almost every instance, in national polls and in state polls, our margin over Trump is wider than is Secretary Clinton. With our victory tonight in Wisconsin, we have now won 7 out of 8 of the last caucuses and primaries.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. Every year is Alan Nathan, the Militant Moderate. Once again, this is the Oasis for those who have an aversion to the left, right, black, white, two-dimensional approach. Absolutely delighted you'll be with us. And you were just listening to the respective victory speeches, first by Ted Cruz, essentially helping Sanders against Hillary Clinton. And then you hear from Sanders helping Cruz against Donald Trump. Did these guys get together for a meal or something? Anyway, the first one, of course, was Ted Cruz, the senator from the great state of Texas, saying that Wisconsin marks a turning point in the race and that despite what everyone predicted, he won. He says that his victory is really bad news for Hillary Clinton, along with her losing Wisconsin to Senator Bernie Sanders. Then you have Bernie Sanders saying that, you know, hey, national polls, he's beating Donald Trump more than Hillary Clinton is. And you know what? Ted Cruz would like to second that observation. And then, of course, he states that thanks to a victory in Wisconsin, his campaign has won 7 out of the last 8 contests against Hillary Clinton. We have a number of topics we're discussing today. In Wisconsin, Sanders prevails over Clinton while Cruz demolishes Trump's. Trump, our trajectory's now changed. Also, a new Reuters poll shows Cruz beating Trump nationally for the first time. You got to wonder, will the Donald cite that survey? Also, after a judge says the State Department showed bad faith in a FOIA case over Clinton's email abuse, the State Department now wants the plaintiff denied discovery of that bad faith. Isn't that cute? Anyway, getting to the race, we have assisting in the opining and analyzing one of my regulars, Robert Wiener, Democratic strategist, columnist, and former communications director for Clinton Drug Czar General Barry McCaffrey. He's also former communications director for Congressman Rangel and Conyers of New York and Michigan, respectively. Bob, good to have you back.
Alan, it's a pleasure. The beat goes on.
The beat does go on. You know, I'm looking at these delegates here. You got Trump with 742, Cruz with 505. You got Kasich with 143, who, you know, still traveling almost by 30 points, trailing by almost 30 points. Senator Rubio, who left about a month ago, right, or something like that.
Right.
And then you got Hillary Clinton on her side with 1,279 versus Bernie Sanders, 1,027. Let's go with the Democrat side first. You need 2,383 to win. And Hillary Clinton is right now ahead of Sanders, with both the superdelegate and the pledge delegate. But if you take away the superdelegates, then all of a sudden the difference between the two candidates is relatively minuscule. It's really not that much. Let me ask you what I've asked some other guests. If it turns out that Sanders does actually collect more pledged votes than does Hillary Clinton, do we see the superdelegates currently with her shifting over to him?
It's a big if, because New York is coming and Hillary is likely to win substantially. But if Bernie does close and if Bernie does win New York, then it's an absolute brand new ballgame.
Also, yesterday, looking at the Republican side, Cruz is doing a number of happy dances. I mean, let's
right.
face it, he, you know, and he's actually a source of comfort for some of the GOP who know that as we look at the polls now, Clinton would indeed prevail over Trump by about 10 points. However, Bernie would even prevail over Trump by even a greater number of points. And now, of course, we have this new poll out by Reuters showing that for the first time, Cruz is prevailing over Trump nationwide. So when you hear Bernie Sanders constantly boasting about how much better he does against Trump than does Hillary Clinton, it seems that's just telling a lot more Republicans to reassess whether or not Trump should be the nominee. And if all of a sudden they put in Cruz instead, that won't be good news for the Democrats, will it?
Well, I find it fascinating, Alan, that Cruz has become the consensus anti-Trump because Kasich has lost 20 out of 21 states. And that really is happening. And Cruz making the case that five of the candidates that ran against him out of the 17 have endorsed him, plus his two senators. He's coming across and becoming a quote-unquote better candidate, but he is still so far extreme right that Hillary has got to be watering her mouth that likely it's Trump or Cruz that will be her opposition.
What makes him more extreme, the fact that he's like very, very far right, or that he's just very effective at deconstructing Hillary Clinton in real time? Because that seems to be the measure of whether or not somebody is an extremist. From either side of the aisle, it's the one who's – it's not just the obvious extremists. We have the crazies on both sides. You just got those, and they reach a certain threshold and say, okay, this guy belongs to the nutcase crowd on the right, and this guy belongs to the nutcase crowd on the left. But we're finding very, very often a lot of bad faith assertions from both sides of the aisle defining opponents as extremists, not because they're truly extreme, but rather because they're just very effective – at ensuring that the other person's ox is gored.
No, Cruz takes it to the point of extreme, even for Republicans, in tear down the government, and among Republicans even in tear down the Supreme Court. Cruz is to the right of where the Republicans will be, and that's what makes him very vulnerable for Hillary or
Is it
Trump,
tearing down the government or making Obama. The government accountable? Because as
that's
you know, politicians seem to have a vested interest in ensuring that government is less accountable than more if it's a party that's more reliant on tax collection than the other side. You see, the GOP are very preoccupied with letting people hold on to as many dollars as they can versus sending taxes into the Treasury, whereas the Democrats are all about creating as many foundational justifications for increasing taxes, all in the name, of course, for doing good for others. I'm still wondering if these Americans, these fellow Americans of ours, are catching on to the sophistry from both sides. What do you think?
Well, Alan, I hate to do this to you, but those are just words, because shutting down the government for weeks on end is stopping people's Social Security checks and their paychecks. And
it's
that's
not stopping
not
weeks on
people,
end.
Okay, I can't finish the sentence. That's not what the American people want. That's what makes him extreme, and that's the answer to the question that you asked.
Oh, but by your measure, any time Congress uses its check against the president, that means they're being extreme, because that is the ultimate check. The only way Congress can put a check on the president is to deny him cash for anything. Now, these days, all these shutting down of government moves that we've seen allowed tons of government workers to remain in place. We know that for a fact. That being the case, isn't it fair to say that government has to always be a potential object of any congressional check on the president? Because once Congress decides to never close down the government, they effectively have lost their check on the president. Because so often these days, we see Obama characterize Congress's check on him as somehow being tantamount to an evil act against the American people, thus neutralizing the American people's check on him through their representatives. It's a rather perversion of the separation of powers, is it not, Bob Wiener?
Well, again, those are words, because the actual check is votes in the Congress on the appropriations and the budget bills, and there's a majority in the Senate and a majority in the House that are Republican that can control those. So that's the way to use
but
it.
But if there's an impasse, that's what can trigger the shutting down of the government, which means that the only thing triggering that shutdown is the impasse. So how is it the impasse is necessarily always the fault of Congress versus the president?
Actually, no. Because
if you have both sides that are equally contributing to the impasse, and it is the impasse, I want to clarify for people before you answer. I want people to understand this. If the impasse is the reason for the government shutdown, and both sides of the aisle are equal contributors to said impasse, then why is it that the impasse is somehow always an example of congressional extremism against the president? Your take.
Do your polling on Paul Ryan versus Trump or Cruz among Republicans, and the Ryan Murray budget, which was a compromise with cuts that Democrats detested but was approved, is what the American people want for working the Congress. They do not want a shutdown, and that always backfires against the Republicans. That's what Ted Cruz stands
but
for.
But isn't it fair to say that all the GOP have to do in that regard is still fight on despite the polls? Because when Obama has been underneath the polls or behind the polls or in opposition to the polls for a whole host of his agenda items, He doesn't care. He presses on anyway. So it seems intellectually vapid, at least intellectually disingenuous, to assert that the Republicans are wrong in not following the polls, but the president's perfectly entitled to do the same, not follow the polls. We have to remember something. The way you get the polls on your side is not by following them, but by leading the people who comprise those polls into the direction that you think is more viable. Now, if you fail to do that, fine. But if you never bother to try and you just succumb to the polls out of the gate, then what the hell are you doing working for anybody? I mean, what's your role?
The travel season is underway, and the falling price of oil means cheaper gas and airline deals. But you should know about an unexpected health danger that could turn your vacation into a medical emergency. Deep vein thrombosis, or DVT, is a serious condition that occurs when blood cells stick together, forming a blood clot in the deep veins of the legs. DVT is commonly caused by sitting in a confined space for a long period of time. Dr. Robert Lookstein is a professor of radiology and surgery at Mount Sinai.
Traveling for more than 4 hours by car, train, or plane can increase the risk for DVT due to a lack of movement that stimulates proper blood circulation. DVT is treatable, but early diagnosis is critical. Many clots can be absorbed by the body with the help of compression socks or medicine, but some people may need an interventional procedure that helps break up and physically remove all or portions of the clot.
To learn more about DVT and potential treatment options, visit clearingtheclot.com.
663 million people around the world lack access to clean drinking water. Women and children often bear the burden of walking hours each day for water, time that could be spent at school or work. Access to clean, safe water transforms lives. This year, Emergency and Charity Water have teamed up to transform communities affected by the global water crisis. With help from Fuller House actress Lori Loughlin, the organizations will work to bring clean water to communities in Ethiopia.
As a mother, the facts about the global water crisis are startling. I'm working with Emergency and Charity Water to ask you to help lift the burden with the 40 pounds challenge. 40 pounds represents the weight of a water-filled jerry can that women and children carry every day to bring water to their families. To participate, upload a picture of yourself to Instagram or Twitter holding anything up to 40 pounds with the hashtag 40 pounds and tag @emergency. For every picture, a donation of $5 will go to funding clean water sources in Ethiopia.
Visit emergencytransforms.com for official challenge rules.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show.
If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
John Nichols was making major strides in his career when at age 32, a water skiing accident left him critically injured. Fortunately, he had disability insurance.
For me, disability insurance was the safety net. I did not have to worry about the bills. I did not have the financial concerns.
Thanks to disability insurance that John had through work and on his own, he continued to receive an income until he could return to work. Learn more at protectyourpaycheck.org, a message from the Nonprofit Life Foundation.
I'm Jesse Gonzalez, Vice President at Kmart. Did you know that premature birth is the number one killer of babies in the United States, or that survivors can face a lifetime of serious health problems? But you can help. Join me in Kmart for the March for Babies Walk. We'll work together to raise funds for research and programs that help the March Against fight premature birth and birth defects and improve the health of moms and babies. Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
It's leap year, and that means one thing. You gain one extra calendar day in your February schedule. If you're planning or preparing for retirement, you can spend a fraction of your extra 24 hours at My Social Security. In as little as 15 minutes, you can create a safe and secure My Social Security account. Join the crowd and sign up today at www.socialsecurity.gov/myaccount. With a personalized My Social Security account, you can obtain an instant, personalized estimate of your future Social Security benefits. Verify the accuracy of your earnings record. Your future benefit amounts are based on your earnings record. Change your address and phone number if you receive monthly Social Security benefits. And sign up for or change direct deposit of your Social Security benefits. Remember, you can access our homepage that links to our wide array of online services any day of the year at www.socialsecurity.gov.
When you look at national polls or you look at statewide polls, we are defeating Donald Trump by very significant numbers. And in almost every instance, in national polls and in state polls, our margin over Trump is wider than is Secretary Clinton. With our victory tonight in Wisconsin, we have now won 7 out of 8 of the last caucuses and primaries.
Tonight is a turning point. It is a rallying cry. It is a call from the hardworking men and women of Wisconsin to the people of America. We have a choice, a real choice. And as a result of tonight, as a result of the people of Wisconsin defying the media, defying the pundits, I am more and more convinced that our campaign is going to earn the 1,237 delegates needed to win the Republican nomination. Tonight was a bad night for Hillary Clinton. It was a bad night in the Democratic primary, and it was an even worse night for her in the Republican primary.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. Every year is Alan Nathan, the militant moderate. Once again, this is the Oasis for those who have an aversion to the left, right, black, white, two-dimensional approach. Absolutely delighted you could be with us. I just wanted to replay those. You were hearing clips first, of course, from Senator Bernie Sanders, a socialist independent who caucuses with the Democrats and is now running as a member of the Democrat Party. He's noting that in national polls, he's beating Donald Trump more than Hillary Clinton would, and then states that thanks to the victory in Wisconsin, his campaign has won 7 of the last 8 contests. After that, you hear Senator Ted Cruz, absolutely delighted he crushed Donald Trump. He says this marks a turning point in the race, and that despite what everyone predicted, he won. He also added that this victory is also very bad news for Hillary Clinton, along with her losing Wisconsin to Senator Bernie Sanders. He says it's bad news for Hillary Clinton because he would do better against her. And it's true, the polls show he does do better against her. And just as he, for a long time, was not polling better than Trump, but now has, some are saying, look for poll changes in the future as well, because nothing ever stays the same. We have Assist Me in the Opining and Analyzing, old friend of the show, still sticking around, one of my regulars, Robert Wiener, Democrat strategist, columnist, and former communications director for Clinton Drug Czar, General Barry McCaffrey, again, also former communications director for Congressman Rangel and Conyers of New York and Michigan, respectively. Bob, good to have you back. Appreciate you hanging out.
It's a pleasure, Alan. Can I take the privilege of correcting you on something?
Go right ahead.
Okay. It's not the Democrat Party. It's the Democratic Party. And Mark Noller, the great historian in the White House press, wrote in his blog when I told him that I was absolutely correct, or you might as well call it the Repoo Party. You want to call it the Democrat Party, we'll call it the Repoo Party.
Yeah, but when you talk about them in the collective, you say the Republicans and the Democrats.
Absolutely. But it's
okay.
The Democratic Party. That's
okay, if you want to, I don't care. I don't care. I say Democrat. I'm not doing it for any particular point.
Well, they do
I don't
because
care.
It sounds acerbic. It sounds a little worse, and so it's a Republican strategy to call it the Democrat Party.
Well, denotatively or connotatively, I think both apply. You can't
okay.
say there's something wrong in saying Democrat Party. Now, if you want to have a back and forth with me about the Queen's English, you want to start engaging in rhetoric with me about terminological inexactitudes and contretemps, I'll play all damn day. You know that, Bob.
Okay.
But you and I also know that you don't want to go down that road. So let's just stick with the topic. Now, no, listen, before break.
You are the only one who could pronounce Ahmadinejad before anybody else could.
It's Ahmadinejad, but thank you. listen, Bob, before break, you and I were chatting about, you know, the shutting down of the government. You said that allowing the shutting down of the government is an extremist tactic when Congress allows it. I was mentioning that, wait a minute, but if the shutdown exists because of an impasse to which both sides have equally contributed, why is it not obvious to everyone, at least with an IQ over salad dressing, that it simply can't always be Congress's fault if you have an impasse comprised of a difference? And this has been brought about by two different sides. How is it that the impasse is more the responsibility of one side than the other, if in fact we're just talking about the separation of powers? I mean, you can't on one hand embrace separation of powers and then on the other hand reject its implementation, as in when a check is placed on the other because of opposition. Bob Wiener.
Because the Democrats have always been willing to continue negotiations and go to a continuing resolution while the Republicans say no.
Nope, nope. Nice try. The president said last time that was endeavored, I'll only sign this one resolution. We can't do it every 2 or 3 months.
Yeah, but every time he says that, when the Congress passes it, he does it anyway. He signs it regardless.
Yeah, but they don't keep coming up with new ones. They do eventually come up with one, although Obama was perfectly happy to give a lot more latitude when it was Harry Reid triggering the continuing resolutions than he has been with the GOP in charge. I think even you would acknowledge that.
Well, the Ryan Murray budget is...
But I find it astonishingly stupid for people not to realize something. You can't have the president characterizing Congress's check on him as always being tantamount to an attack on the American people, because when that happens, the American people are themselves neutralized from putting their check on their president through their elected leaders. Why? Because, if their elected leaders put a check on the president says that's an assault on the American people. So it's a rather cyclical patch of silliness here. And the president isn't so much wrong in trying to pull it off. I mean, you know, it's his job, I guess, to lie on behalf of his agenda, even if he looks like an idiot. I mean, he's allowed to say what he says, characterizing the check on him as somehow being an assault on the American people. The folks who seem to have their heads up their rectum would be the hierarchy of the GOP that allow him to do that. And I'm just at a loss as to why the hierarchy of the GOP have yet to learn that as long as they're not defining the president, he gets to define himself. And as long as they're not defining the dispute, he gets to define it. I mean, as it is, the GOP are already working up against an empirically verified biased press. Why, in your estimation, have the GOP been slow on the uptake regarding this difference?
Well, you know, you're just forgetting what the shutdowns were about. Cruz's latest are about Planned Parenthood and abortion, when 95% of the money of Planned Parenthood goes to mammograms, cancer, diabetes, and heart. And so for that to be a shutdown and not a matter of compromise is typical of the Cruz hard line, and the American people don't stand for it. That's why.
But that's just
that's
it.
Why
if
they're blamed.
The Democrats,
that's why the Republicans are
blamed. If the Democrats push their heels in the ground, they're just standing up for principles. Anybody else who's not part of the left, that they do the same, they're extremists. You realize how syllogistically simplistic this is. I mean, your Democrats, look through Obama, he's basically saying, here's my proposed solution for the problem. If you disagree with my proposed solution for the problem, by default, that means you support the continuation of the problem, as opposed to having an alternative perspective or dissenting view. You do realize how tiresome this gets after a while, do you not, Bob Wiener?
You don't shut down the government for 5% of Planned Parenthood money. You compromise, and that's what Cruz doesn't know how to do.
If compromise is simply requiring the other side to come to your side, the word compromise is irrelevant to the discussion. If you characterize all dissent as being inappropriate, you are fixing it so you never have to defend your politics. This is the masturbated sophistry defining the Democratic Party today. However, it also exposes the most amazingly weak Republican Party I've ever seen in my lifetime. You're listening to The Alan Nathan Show.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com.